Pensacola's first choice for morning news, traffic, sports, and talk. The Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. Good morning, Pensacola.
Did bring it up to FDOT in that meeting, and they were very pleased that we were starting to talk about replacing that bridge, because as we all know, they have a plan and a PD&E for Highway 98 that's going to six lane that, and the current PD&E right now is to put a raised overpass through Navarre. That is not in their five-year plan, so it's not going to design anytime soon.
Santa Rosa County Commission Chairman Dave Peach, District 4 Navarre, had put off asking FDOT too much about bridge stuff because, you know, right now they're kind of occupied with a different bridge project, right? And he's like, you know, it's time. We got to go. That Navarre Beach Causeway, that has got to be replaced. So the question is, well, what's the shape of that replacement going to look like?
But the picture you have is one option, that it, you know, continues straight across 87 and goes across and lands on property the county owns. There's other concepts out there that, you know, the bridge starts at 87 and then curves over to the existing causeway. There's an option to replace the bridge where it is, you know.
So it could go straight across from 87, basically make that like an intersection all the way across, or you could go from there to the current landing out on the island. There's all kinds of possibilities of how this would look, but the bridge is functionally obsolete. You know, yes, it can support cars, but it is out of line with current standards, and it is going to have to be replaced at some point. So that raises a question. What's the question? Who's going to pay?
Basically, today, how we'll fund it, to be determined. Who's going to build it, to be determined. You know, is it going to be a toll, to be determined. There, all that is way out in the future. The first step we need to take as a board is a feasibility study to go, yeah, these are the options, and this is the best option to get that ball rolling. And like I said, it's an 8 to 10 year thing.
8 to 10 years is going to be a lot of money in the $100 million vicinity, maybe more. God knows, with construction prices going up. So, you know, first out the gate, Commissioner Calkins.
One of the most important things that I'm opposed to is a toll. And especially when we have a situation where we have money that we could have got, but we didn't file the paperwork.
Oh, good Lord, man.
So that's money that could have, you know, been diverted from the general fund.
Let it go.
You know, to the bridge. Money's money. You failed to file paperwork, and, you know, we're less money than where we were left off with. So, no, I will not stop talking about that. I'll bring that up at every meeting because it's money that we've lost.
No. Nope.
So we need to make sure that it doesn't happen again. So no tolls. That's number one.
It's not money that we lost. It's money that we did not apply for, that we might have gotten and we might not have gotten. But, you know, this is all in the same meeting, so I'm not saying like he brought this up at a subsequent meeting. We're still looking to see what he brings up tomorrow, obviously, about this. This is the whole business with Dan Shebler and the application for the SCOP funding and all of that. But kind of interesting, because you have the other commissioners pushing back on this toll concept. Commissioner Bob Cole?
It was always put right before the public that there would be a toll to build this bridge. We removed the toll from an old bridge once we became ownership of that, but it was never a hidden fact that a new bridge would very likely cost a toll to pay for it.
So Commissioner Cole says everybody always knew this was going to be a toll. I don't know, you know, you act like this can't be a toll, but people always knew that. Sam Parker.
Because just to be blunt, it's a great soundbite. It's the only word I can think of to say I'm against tolls. I'm against residents paying for it. I'm against anybody paying for it. But the reality is that's making decisions on leadership. Because I would want to hear some alternatives to how you pay for it.
In other words, Commissioner Calkins, it's great to get up there and pound the table and say no toll, but what's the funding plan, right?
If you don't toll it, and the county has to pay for it, well, you pull it out of general fund, and then you got folks in Jay that'll never visit the beach paying for it, or you got people living in mobile homes that are valued at under $25,000 not paying any, and you know, at the end of the day, the concept that Republicans nor Democrats in Washington for the last few decades seem to understand is that somebody's got to pay for it.
Somebody has to pay. He's exactly right. And who's that somebody? Well, it's not going to be the state. That ship has long sailed on that bridge. So what do you do? General fund? A toll? I mean, what exactly are the alternatives for funding this thing, right? And he says, look, I'm open to a better way if there's a better way, but what's your better way?
As much as I would love to say, hey, I'm against tolls, if somebody can bring me a better idea. But it seems pretty rational, you know?
Yeah. Look, I like free things. I like free parking. I like free bridges. But at the same time, somebody's going to have to pay a thing. Somebody's going to have to pay for it somehow. And the question is, what's that how? Because it's ultimately, it's going to be a matter of what you think the role of government is, what you think the cost of transportation, who should bear it. And then, you know, sort of what is the fair way, right? The people who live out on the island, high property values, high property taxes. Do they get already a fair share of what they pay in property tax? Well, that's the choice you make to live on a barrier island, maybe you say. Or maybe you say, well, they already pay so much. You know, they're already over-contributing, so they're paying a greater share of it if it comes out of the general fund. And, of course, general fund is going to pay for bridges and roads in the north end. So, I don't know, nobody wants to have a toll. The question is, what's your alternative? And, you know, they talked a lot about making visitors pay instead or making non-Floridians pay instead. There's always something. It's weird because as Republicans, you know, we kind of believe that you ought to pay for the stuff that you use. We kind of believe that, you know, you should pay your own way. And yet, at the same time, everybody understands the appeal of make somebody else pay for everything. So I don't have a great answer for you. I certainly don't love a toll. If you do a toll, it's got to be reasonable. At least that's the hope. 437-1620, 437-16, like Garcon Point is not reasonable, right? When it actually has the toll, which is going to happen again in probably a couple of months, fingers crossed. Or maybe sooner. Alex Andrade says mid-May. Maybe. He didn't say for sure. He said it might be possible. Did you have to lead with blasphemy? I mean, just, I know people casually throw words around, but Regina King opens the Oscars last night with that phrase. So, and then she goes on.
It has been quite a year, and we are still smack dab in the middle of it. We are mourning the loss of so many, and I have to be honest, if things had gone differently this past week in Minneapolis, I might have traded in my heels for marching boots. Now,
but they didn't, right? I mean, hypothetically, I would have been angry. That's kind of an odd tone to start things off, but okay.
I know that a lot of you people at home want to reach for your remote when you feel like Hollywood is preaching to you.
But wait, let me preach to you.
But as a mother of a black son, I know the fear that so many live with, and no amount of fame or fortune changes that. Okay?
So, agreed. And listen, I don't... People can say what they want to say. It's a production. You know, I mean, I think it's absurd that actors who deliver other people's lines feel like it's important to them to have an opinion. But, you know, it's fine. That, you know, people do all kinds of absurd things. That's fine. And it's understandable in the moment. But it's just a weird way to say it. Like, I know you people at home want to reach for your remotes. Ah, yes. Us people at home. You know, the serfs, the plebes, the watchers, the ones who are waiting for the wisdom from on high in L.A. 7:23 on News Radio. Pardon my sarcasm. There are times when it just 7:23 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Mark Jacobs in the newsroom with our headlines. Mark.
More people now protected against coronavirus. The CDC puts the number at 36%, with more than half the nation getting at least one dose. But it appears some might not get that second shot. Netflix celebrating its big Oscar night, taking home 7 trophies, the streaming giant winning for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom and Mank. Disney had the second largest haul with 5, including 3 wins for Nomadland and 2 for Soul. And up in the air, it's a bird. It's a plane. No, it's someone in a helicopter dropping a football to help Rob Gronkowski set a world record. Gronkowski caught the ball dropped from 600 feet. 4-time Super Bowl champ serving as honorary coach Saturday at the University of Arizona broke that record on his 3rd attempt. Why Arizona, you might ask? Well, it's Gronk's alma mater.
Of course. As God is my witness,
I thought footballs could fly. Should that not also set the record for the longest completed pass?
Oh, good one. Yeah, I wonder about that.
600 feet. Of course, maybe he didn't pass. Maybe he just dropped it.
A drop is not a pass. I mean, yeah. That's not a
unless it was a forward.
Right.
Pass.
Well, I'm impressed he caught it, quite frankly, because that's a long way down to catch it.
And that's also that's got to come in hot.
Hot and moving, right? I mean, you ever catch a pop? And I'm sure it's straight down, and straight down is the hardest thing to catch.
Yep.
So,
coming right at your face.
Well done. Would have been better if it had tossed the trophy down. But whatever, you know, whatever, they make their choices.
Shh. Don't even suggest that.
All right, Mark, thanks so much for the update. 7:25. Yeah, the whole second dose thing. Listen, you get a substantial amount of immunity from just the one dose. It's like, I think it's like 50% is what I remember them saying, as opposed to 95% from the second dose. And people are reluctant because of the concern about side effects. You should get your second dose. But there are people who have that view, and I mean, I'm not agreeing with it. I'm just kind of, this is what people might think. But I will tell, and again, concern about side effects. I'll just tell you from my experience. I talked to you a little bit about this on Friday. I got my second dose shot on Thursday. No side effects. I mean, I felt a little bit, I don't even know if it was from that on Friday where I was just a little bit achy and I worried that I was going to get sick, but I didn't. So there you go. And that was I had another friend who got the same exact shot, same exact day at Brownsville. No side effects whatsoever. 7:26 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. And 2 weeks to full immunity. 2 weeks to hugs. I mean, I still just hug a little bit. 2 weeks to not wearing a mask most places unless they require me to wear it. 2 weeks to not having to feverishly wash hands and do hand sanitizer. My hands are screaming at me over the... I'm just telling you. I'm looking forward to this thing in about 2 weeks when the full immunity sets in. Davis Allen, traffic on the 5s.
And I'm a little over 1 week till my second dose, so let's go.
3 weeks for you, a week and a half for me.
I think I'm 8 days. Yeah, I'm 8 days. Let's go. All right.
Yesterday, we were on our bike ride on the north side of 98, west of the Garson Point Bridge, like Redfish Point, across from Tiger Point. I found the coolest thing. It's right behind the jiu-jitsu place. You know where that is on Highway 98? Just west of there, like where there's a comic shop and the strip mall and all that. Right behind the CrossFit, they have a whole wall. I mean, maybe 150 feet long that they run pro artist quality graffiti on. Including Spider-Man and I think it was a Venom and then Wolverine. And like, I mean, it was art. And I'm just riding my bike on 98 and I look over and I'm like, what's that? And I go right back there. Sure enough. I mean, it's amazing. Really. So if you have a chance and you're in that vicinity, go drive back there. I mean, it's worth it. Just drive past it or bike past it or walk past it and go take a look and tell me that I'm wrong. It's pretty impressive.
I'm Jennifer Kashinka with Your Money Now. It's a lucrative time to be leaving GameStop C-suite. As the run-up in the video game retailer share prices enabled 4 executives to depart with vested stock now valued at about $290 million. Separation agreements between GameStop and the 4 executives, including CEO George Sherman, have provisions that let stock awarded during their tenure to vest when they leave. Sherman, who's set to step down by July 31st, will likely leave with about $169 million. Bed Bath is making changes it hopes will keep its stores well-stocked and well-replenished. The retailer is investing $250 million in its supply chain with a strategy intended to blend physical with digital by upgrading inventory management systems and distribution centers. Currently, it takes Bed Bath 35 days to replenish its stores with inventory. The goal is now under 10 days. On Wall Street, futures are mixed after stocks posted sharp gains on Friday. That's your money now.
Number of studies out there, recent studies, that of a great concern. One of them showed that only one of five Americans could name a right protected by the First Amendment. That's a bit scary. Similarly, we have studies that show that there is a percentage, about a quarter of our young population, who don't believe democracy is a good thing. Those are statistics that should raise concern.
And Sonia gave some of the examples of the statistics that are really just shocking these days. There are so many others. Turns out only about a third of people today can name the three branches of our government.
Good Lord.
10% of people apparently believe that Judith Scheinlein serves on the Supreme Court with Justice Sotomayor and myself. people may better know her as Judge Judy. And I love Judge Judy, but she is not one of our colleagues.
Justices Neil Gorsuch and Sonia Sotomayor doing a talk about civic engagement maybe a week and a half ago, something like that. And fascinating, horrifying. But here's the thing. Here's the big takeaway. Both of them agree, and they don't agree about much legal. Well, that's not true. One of the things that he was quick to point out about the Supreme Court is, you know, the Supreme Court mostly agrees. 40% of their cases are unanimous. Do you know that? 40%. And the thing is, they're not the big controversial cases, but think about it this way. Of all the cases that percolate up to the Supreme Court, what's it, about 80 a year that actually get heard by the Supreme Court? And this is cases that, you know, lower courts rule on and disagree about. And they're really pressing, ripe, interesting issues that the Supreme Court does decide to take on. Most cases are not that way. Most cases are settled easily. Most cases are settled. Clearly, the law is clear. It is settled. It's not. It's only those really hard cases. You know how, like, you know, in your marriage, you have, you know, or your business, okay? You have problems that just seem like nobody can figure that problem out. Nobody can solve it. You know, those are the ones. And worse than that, a whole group of really smart people over a long period of time with teams of lawyers haven't been able to figure them out, okay? So really, really, really hard cases percolate all the way up to the Supreme Court. And at that point, 40% of the time, they rule unanimously. So does the Supreme Court always fight and disagree? No. But the one thing they agree about is civic engagement. And civic engagement, the importance of talking to each other and being involved in the process and working on legislation or advocating for your cause, it's a complex thing, but it requires at least two basic elements. Number one, you have to understand how the system works. Most people don't. I mean, they just, you know, there's a cause, get angry, get out in the street, protest. Well, what are the three branches of government? I don't know, but I want more money. You know, or I don't know, but I want the cops to treat us better. And look, every citizen has a right to say whatever they want to say and to stand for whatever they understand. But if you really believe in this concept of having a constitutional republic, or we sometimes call a democracy, you've got to believe in understanding how it works. understanding that the county commission is one thing and the city council is a different thing and ECUA is a different thing and the state representatives are different and the Florida State Supreme Court and getting that. So this is what we try to always teach on this show. Like the undergirding of all the stuff I'm talking to you all the time is just making sure we communicate those basic elements, like how the government works and what it's doing right now. Why? Because self-government is frail. It's rare. It usually doesn't last a long time. Over 200 years, that's really unusual. And if we don't, every generation, work actively to nurture it, nourish it, tend it, grow it, right? It will not survive. Now, out of the other percentage of cases, right? He says 40% of the cases that they get to are unanimous. 25% of them, about a quarter of them, are 5-4. Okay? And he says that's actually a pretty good track record since...
The figure's at 40% of unanimity and about 25% 5-4. Those are the same figures that were in place in 1945 when President Roosevelt had appointed 8 of the 9 justices on the Supreme Court of the United States, one president. And I think if we're doing as well as they did then, we ought to be pretty proud of our rule of law in this
country.
Yeah,
we got justices nominated by, 5 different presidents right now serving together, and they get a unanimity about the same amount and the same amount of 5-4 decisions as under one who put all 8. I mean, that is pretty impressive. So 437-1620, 437-1620, what's the key? What's the key? What are some of the things we need to do to really keep this thing called the United States of America going? Well, obviously, you have to teach and people have to learn those basics, but not just one time in a civics class in high school and then have to pass the test to get it. I mean, that's ongoing education, because how many of you have ever forgotten something you learned and knew at one time? Like all the time, right? So, again, what we're always trying to do on the show is promote that sort of understanding all the time. So understanding civics, that's key. But also is listening to people who disagree with you, right? Listening to their arguments, paying attention, seeing what they say and how they say it. And, you know, I know Sotomayor was talking about the Supreme Court when she said this, but it's true across the board. It's not just on the Supreme Court. You got to read the opinions. I read the opinions. Not all of them. I read the ones that are interesting to me, but you should read them. And here's why. It's very easy to look at the headline and then to take away some conclusion and decide whether you agree or not based on the conclusion. But keep in mind, that conclusion came from some very thoughtful people who work really hard to come to unanimity or at least consensus after hearing the arguments from a lot of different sides. It's useful to pay attention to people who disagree with you, to take them seriously. And one of the things she talked about in her speech was challenging audiences to read the opinions and to pay attention to the longer version of arguments that people who disagree with you make.
And so for me, educating the public on that, encouraging the public to engage in reading our decisions, I would venture to say that for many people who thought an outcome was good, that if they read a dissenting opinion, they will pause. Whether their mind is changed or not, they will still pause to recognize that there are strong arguments on the other side, that those arguments point to the weaknesses in a majority's conclusion, and that neither side, as I explained earlier, is acting from any sense of bad faith, but for a real commitment to getting the law right.
That's true whether it's Supreme Court opinions or the person who disagrees with you on Facebook or the person that you're eating dinner with in your family that you don't see eye to eye on things with. Yes, we should all learn more. Yes, we should all be better informed. But one of the key things is being willing to take other people on the basis of what they say as if they're serious about it and to listen to them. And to explore their view. And to not just judge people because they disagree with you as though you shouldn't have a relationship with them. You know, I'll just tell you personally, a lot of my closest friends are very liberal. I don't seek it out. But if I found out that most of my close friends were conservative, that would scare me. because it would mean I was judging people on the basis of my own narcissistic view that I know it all. I think you ought to hang out with a lot of different people. Read a lot of different things. Watch a lot of different movies. Movies that make you feel uncomfortable. And ask yourself the question, do they have something right? You know, be willing to say, hey, I think I got 80% on my side and they got 20%. And don't just say they're stupid. Don't just revile them. Say they hate America. They may have a different idea about what America is than you. And maybe some of them don't really believe in what America is. Okay, you can figure that out over time. But maybe you can persuade them that America ought to be what you say, not what they say. Because remember, listen, I said this. If I've said it once, I said it 100 times. We have a democracy, and the idea of a democracy is instead of a civil war. And the way we keep it that way is by talking and listening and paying attention. And not tolerance that puts up with people, but tolerance that almost enjoys the difference and says, how can I learn from you about this? How can I see the world differently from looking at it your way? The First Amendment is not there as just a protection for you to spout off and say your thing. I mean, it does that. It's really meant to underscore the value of us listening to each other when we disagree. I know this is not like a news-ish topic, but this is the most important thing as a society that we can be doing all the time. And again, because you have two such polar different Supreme Court justices talking about this at length recently, I thought it might be worth a minute on the radio. And you've been thinking about assisted living, or you're thinking about maybe skilled nursing, or even, you know, somebody needs memory care, dementia, that kind of stuff. Listen, I know right now it's been a little bit of a difficult time. With all the things going on with COVID and restrictions, and it's been challenging. And for about a year, you know, it's been very understandable. But recently, places are opening up. Visitation is opening. And every place has just a little bit different policy, which is understandable. They're each individual places. That's where assisted living locators comes in. That's where John Horton comes in. You know, historically, he's always helped people just like you find the right place. Okay. Now, even more so when there are so many options and so many questions, he can help you figure out what's your need and what's the right situation for it. AssistedLivingLocators.com. Find out how John Horton can help you find just the right place. Davis, how many times have you heard me talk about how there's those people that when you call America a democracy, they get all stern and jumpy and want to, no, it's a constitutional republic. How many times have you heard me say that?
A lot.
So I'm talking about the importance of listening to other people in civic education, and I get done and I get several texts in, Andrew, don't you know it's a constitutional republic, not a democracy? Shh. Shh. Yes, of course. But stop it. You're making a fight where you don't need to make a fight. Well, don't you understand? People need to... Shh. It's a democratically elected, constitutionally governed, representative republic. Yes, of course. But when you take a strident response every time... you can call it a democracy. You can call it a republic. You can call it a lot of things. Just stop. Stop fighting over the small stuff and listen. 753 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Mark Jacobs in the newsroom with our headlines. Mark?
This is not a democracy. Oh, I'm sorry.
It's just, yeah, everybody wants to have that zinger.
So
you know?
When are we all voting on the budget?
Stop. It's not a zinger environment. Anyway, go ahead, Mark.
U.S. troops in Afghanistan starting to move out, marking the beginning of the end of America's longest war. The top American commander there confirming early withdrawal is underway. Little more than half of Americans approve of President Biden's performance.
It has been dominated by handling of the COVID crisis and vaccine rollout. He will also use this well-known juncture to make his very first address to a joint session of Congress. That comes in prime time Wednesday night.
That's NBC's Kelly O'Donnell. New polls out show anywhere from 52% to 54% think Biden's doing a good job. New study challenging the rules of social distancing. A couple of MIT professors say it doesn't matter if people are 6 feet or 60 feet apart indoors. They claim the risk of spreading coronavirus is basically the same, even if you're wearing a mask.
Well, from 6,000 feet, it's the same.
What about if you're dropping a football from 600 feet?
Oh, man. Mark, thanks so much for the update. Nothing is magic, everything is a matter of reducing risk. That's it. Being in a shared room, sharing air, yes. If you're at a distance, there's a little bit less risk. But if you're not wearing a tight-fitting mask, I mean, just all of these things have an effect on the probability that if somebody's infected and you're near them, you're going to get infected too. Davis Allen, time for a quick shot of sports.
Right field, Rojas is there, Madison Bumgarner, a complete game shutout, no hits for the Braves in seven, and the Diamondbacks sweep the doubleheader, they win game 2-7-0.
Wait, so Madison Bumgarner, he pitched a complete game, didn't give up a hit. Why isn't it a no-hitter? Well, because he only pitched seven innings.
Troublemaker.
Why did that happen? Because Major League Baseball, starting this season, if you play a doubleheader, you only play seven innings, rather than a traditional game of nine innings. It's an effort to make games more, you know, I guess more fan-friendly, and fans do sort of appreciate the shorter games. But Madison Bumgarner threw a no-hit shutout, but it is not recognized as a traditional no-hitter. But still, a good game nonetheless. The Diamondbacks only gave up one hit in their doubleheader, so the Braves fans don't appreciate that, because that's who they were playing.
How many no-nos or perfect games have been ruined in the eighth or the ninth inning?
A lot.
Yeah.
Like many. I can think of a couple perfect games that got ruined in the ninth inning. So, but still, good game nonetheless. Also, high school football players in the area getting ready for spring practice today. So some are like, yes, football's back. Others are like, no, practices are back. Long conditionings are back. But that's okay. Also, a really surprising move, Hall of Fame basketball coach Kim Mulkey of Baylor, who won three national championships there, leaving the job to take the job at LSU. A surprise move for many, but she is a Louisiana native. She played and coached at Louisiana Tech previously. That's your quick shot of sports.
Best thing, this guy named Josh in Nebraska, I guess he got pandemic, you know, just troubled by being alone during the pandemic, and he challenged somebody else named Josh to prove who was the real Josh. Hundreds of people showed up to a fun noodle battle, mostly wearing masks, that's good, in order to decide who was the real Josh in Nebraska. I mean, that's just fun stuff. Good for you.